Welcome to our podcast, Sustainable Grassroots Organizations, the example of OMAMA. In this podcast, we would like to bring forward grassroots organizations that make a change in society. For us, it is important to promote these organizations since they rely on their members actively participating if they want to have an impact on society.
I am Kunigunde and I am located in Helsinki.
And I'm Friedrich, also in Helsinki, and today is the 28th of February 2023. This podcast was produced by us, Axel Lilius and Michelle Sandin. In our title, we mentioned both sustainability and grassroots organizations. So starting out, we want to have a closer look at what sustainability and grassroots organizations actually mean. So having a look at sustainability first, definitions of sustainability depend in the literature on the author. Elkington, in a paper, defines sustainability through the term triple bottom line. And this term, to Elkington, posits that instead of one economic profit-driven bottom line, business organizations should focus on three dimensions instead: profit, people, and the planet. Organizations, in his opinion, should commit to focusing as much on social and environmental concerns as they do on profits. Birk de la Bella Casa, on the other hand, came up with a different definition, describing sustainability as the ability to sustain, respond, and care for other than humans, instead for the web of life. Care, in this context, to quote her directly, means that everything that is done, rather than everything that we do, to maintain, continue, and repair the world, so that all, rather than we, can live as well as possible.
So, what are grassroots innovations then, in the context of sustainability? When we are talking about grassroots organizing, we mean local voluntary forms of organizing and innovating that are doing something for the local community without necessarily expecting much in return except for resilience, trust, and social relations. These are innovative networks of activists and organizations that lead bottom-up solutions for sustainable development. These solutions respond to the local situations and the interests and values of the communities involved. In contrast to conventional incremental green reforms, grassroots initiatives seek to practice deeper alternative forms of sustainable development. The people involved in grassroots organizing are committed activists who often seek to experiment with social innovations, as well as using greener technologies and techniques in areas such as housing, renewable energy, food, and alternative money. They seek to create new social institutions and systems of provision based upon different values to those of the mainstream. Examples of grassroots innovations and organizations include community renewable energy initiatives, eco-housing, local organic food schemes, and community currencies such as time banks.
More specifically, in this podcast episode, we will look into a more specific kind of grassroots innovation, namely solidarity economy organizations, or SEOs. Marco Nato describes SEOs as run by the communities themselves, applying rules of governance that are intended to promote democracy and gender equality. And second, the central objective of the governance of SEOs is to bring social and economic impacts to their members and local communities, such as improvements in sheltering, education, and infrastructure. Various other authors, such as Pansera and Rizzi, Pestov and Hulgard, and Politrini, define SEOs as follows. SEOs share the same principles and values of humanism, persistence in self-management, democratization of power and means, gender equality, inclusiveness, and reciprocity.
For the specific organization explored in this episode, which is OMAMA, it is also important to understand a bit about regenerative agriculture, which is a way of making farming more sustainable. So there are some different definitions of what regenerative agriculture actually is. So one of them is that regenerative agricultural systems are designed to minimize external inputs or external impacts of agronomy outside the farm, as defined by Pearson. Similarly, Rhodes defines these systems as those in which inputs of energy in the form of fertilizers and fuels are minimized because these key agricultural elements are recycled as far as possible. So one of the aims of regenerative agriculture is to be as local and as independent from outside resources as possible. But there is more to it than that. Regenerative agriculture can also be defined around the outcome, which is that food grown in a regenerative manner restores and maintains natural systems like water and carbon cycles to enable land to continue to produce food in a manner that is healthier for people and the long-term health of the planet and its climate. Regenerative agriculture can also be a part of grassroots organization. For example, Seymour points out that there is a large amount of diversity in the regenerative agriculture movements. This diversity applies to the types of practices used, the people involved and their political views, experiences, opinions and physical locations. The regenerative agriculture movement started to emerge in Western societies in the 1980s, but it is also very important to note that regenerative designs and agricultural practices aren't actually something new, but indigenous peoples have been successfully managing the land using the same principles for thousands of years.
Now that we have a bit of background knowledge about grassroots innovations and sustainable farming, let's hear from an expert involved in such an organization how they work in reality.
So today we are interviewing Maija Lumme. Maija is a changemaker, activist and sustainability expert. At the moment she works for Fair Trade and produces a podcast for Pro Ethical Trade Finland, in short EETI, among other things. This time we are interviewing her about the ecological farming cooperative Omamaa, where she is also active. Omamaa, which means our land in Finnish, is a food cooperative that is based on community-supported agriculture and sustainable farming principles. So, welcome Maija. Would you like to tell us a bit more about yourself and how and why you became involved in Omamaa?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been involved with Omamaa since 2015 when I was working with EETI, the NGO you mentioned, Pro Ethical Trade Finland. We had this esoteric or progressive EU project called Social and Solidarity Economy something. It was a very long name. I don't even remember what was the name of the project, but we were looking at these examples of solidarity economy in Finland. And that was basically the first time in 2015 when I heard about solidarity economy. And so we were looking at these alternative ways of, you know, arranging economy in Finland, and in the project we were looking at those examples around the Europe. So there were very many different kinds of approaches to, you know, meet our basic needs. You know, what is economy? It's about fulfilling our needs, everyday needs, getting food, getting the services we need, and kind of looking for these more humane approaches to produce these services. So I was looking for the different initiatives in Finland, and one of the good ones was Omamaa. So I get to know about Omamaa back in 2015, and I was like, this is really great. I've been working with these supply chain issues, you know, human rights, environmental issues for more than 10 years, and the thing is that when you buy food from a supermarket, it's very difficult to know what is the real kind of sustainability in the product, because the supply chains are super long, and even though there are these certifications and audits and whatever, you don't really know where the food comes from and what kind of impact it has had on people. So once I got to visit the farm in Tuusula, we are operating, Omama is operating on two farms in Tuusula, I kind of found that this is the most transparent and the most, you know, sustainable way of producing food, doing it yourself basically. And I'm not a farmer, so I don't have like illusion of becoming I don't think that I could produce food for myself, so I'm happy to participate in this cooperative where there are actually people who know how to do it, and I can bring in some other skills that I have, and also it's about you know, covering the risks and, you know, sharing the responsibilities. So I was immediately like fascinated by the example, and I've been a member ever since, and doing a bit of voluntary work every now and then, and doing the distribution and participating in other ways. And I think it's a great way to you know, learn about food, learn about the production, learn about agriculture, appreciate the food we are having, and it's not like you just want the cheapest product from the supermarket shelf, but actually it's like we did it, so it becomes a bit more dear thing.
Yeah.
That was the short introduction.
You've already described Omama as a food cooperative, and I think like all of the listeners, they've already heard about what makes a cooperative, but maybe could you just briefly tell us a bit more in detail how Omama operates and what in your opinion really makes it a cooperative?
We have the first development in the cooperative's history was that it was a cooperative for producers. But now it is a cooperative for members. We have like farming members. We have the people who are producing the food, but then we have also the kind of customers. We are not customers because we are participating in the production. So it's already like changing the roles a bit towards more healthier kind of dynamics. But we have a yearly general meeting where we choose the board, and we can participate in the decision making of the cooperative. I have never been in the board. I choose to do these very practical things because, you know, sitting in meetings is hardly what I do every day for hours, so I choose to do more like practical things. But we have a board and active board members, and anyone basically could participate in those meetings, and we have these frequent farm dining events where these kind of topics relevant to the cooperative are discussed with members and friends. So there's a lot of places to participate. And of course, we encourage members and friends, if you are not a member of the cooperative, you are very much welcome to join us on the farm and get your hands dirty.
And maybe talking about this farming aspects and getting your hands dirty, and I think like everybody that has any kind of farming experience can confirm that it's like really hard and demanding labor. Mm-hmm. And your members, especially those that grow the crops, did they have any farming background, or are they farmers by profession before they joined your cooperative?
The farm we are mostly operating on is a family farm that has been in our kind of head farmer's family for something like 500 years, or they have a very long history in farming. So our Jukka, who is the farmer, is very, very he has a lot of knowledge, and he's basically teaching all the others. And we cooperate with different schools. So there are interns that go to work on the farm and that have studied farming, and so you get to have more experience on that. But there are also many people who have like zero experience, and there's always something to be done for all levels of farming expertise. I'm just happy if somebody tells me what to do, and mostly it's like, you know, weeding or collecting berries and pretty simple things. But yes, I completely agree that it's hard work, and once you kind of do the hard work of weeding strawberries for a day, or, you know, putting those tiny baby strawberries in the field, or collecting berries, and you really like learn and start appreciating the food we get, because it's not an easy thing, and with the increasing kind of challenges with climate, you know, we've had very, very difficult seasons the past couple of years. A lot of rain, too much rain, wrong time, or like nice sunny weather but during a wrong season. So it's like it's a really challenging thing, and the thing is that the producers shouldn't be the ones that need to, you know, suffer all the consequences. We all need food, and it's like one of the key things in the future. If we want to, you know, eat and have a healthy soil, and, you know, all these things, we should be more interested in how the food is being produced.
Yeah, it sounds fair to me that like the ones eating the food are also like partly taking the risk for producing it.
Yeah, not only the producer, because they also have, you know, farming, you have to have investments. You need to buy the seeds, and then you might fail. The season might be failing. And it's like, well, the consumer is like, oh, not my problem. And then what if the producer doesn't have the means to prepare for the next season because there has been no crops or so? It's like, I think it's something that needs to be taken really seriously. And I read today that in the UK, the producers in the UK have like close their business. There's a lack of vegetables in the supermarkets because of the retailers not paying enough for the production, so they haven't been able to meet the increasing energy prices, and so they are not producing food anymore, and retailers have been pushing prices down. So it's like, I don't think it should be taking lightly,
yeah,
these things.
Definitely, yeah. And I think like maybe some of the listeners would also be interested, like apart from the farming jobs, obviously, that we've touched upon before already, what other duties one can fulfill in Omama. If I'm not mistaken, you're like organizing the food bag handouts. You also mentioned that you're like responsible for a lot of different tasks. So maybe you could give us like a short overview, what other tasks can members do, and what other duties can they fulfill apart from the farming work?
So there's like basically every day of the week, all around the year, except a few weeks during the Christmas time, I think, there is a there is a car going to Tuusula, and you can hop on and do all sorts of work. We don't only produce vegetables, so there's like bread making and falafel making and oat yogurt making at the farm during the Tuesdays and Thursdays that are the back days. And for me, since I'm working full time, it's a bit of a challenge to go to the farm on weekdays. So I've taken the back distribution, and we just launched our new distribution point in Etelä-Haaga last year. So it's kind of my responsibility, and I'm sharing with it with a friend. But then I actually got yesterday a message from a friend at the Coop that could, because we're always in need of more members and more, active participation. So I was asked to support in the communications department. We don't have a department, but, doing a bit of social media. And so they asked if I could do like pictures or a video and explain why I'm a member in Omama and why you should join the cooperative as well. So I might be doing a bit of marketing and comms in the coming few weeks. So then there has been I think there was last week or so, this like miso making workshop. So people are, being very inventive. We have like the basic ingredients. What we can produce in Finland, that's basically what we are, that's our portfolio. We don't have the avocados, we don't have the almonds. But actually, I think they might be experimenting with, I think they are producing some nuts at the farm. They are trying all these different crops because it's not a monoculture project. So there are at least been some bananas and whatnot. But so we want to be, innovative in the ways we can use these very nice Finnish ingredients. And there was this miso workshop. I don't know. I think they probably fermented some fava beans and did the miso out of those. So basically, if you have like special skills, you can support the cooperative in many ways. And if you are not very innovative, there's always the berry picking and the weeding at the fields. And for me, for example, it's very refreshing because then, sitting at the laptop doing these, reports and guides and communications and sending emails day after day, it feels super nice to be out in the fields and actually like doing some real work. Yeah.
Definitely. So maybe if we're pivoting away from like the everyday work at Omama, and since we're also trying to connect it to the theoretical part of our course, and in our course we've touched a lot upon the topic of sustainability, and since what Omama is doing would probably be described by many people as making our world more sustainable, I would like to ask you, what does the word sustainability mean to you, and if you would agree with the sentiment that Omama makes our world more sustainable?
I would definitely agree because, sustainability for me means, reducing negative impact on people and planet, and it can also include the producing positive impact, which in, for example, in Omama, it's about the food production, but it's also a community building project. So, what we, in my opinion, just meeting the needs, if we think about meeting our needs in a sustainable way, we can't only limit that to like calories, a certain amount of calories is not sustainable way of meeting one's needs, but we need the human interaction. And so it could be arranged in a retailer could, I've seen these initiatives where you have these slow cashiers where you actually get to talk with the person working in a store, but actually there's less and less people working in supermarkets because you have the self-help cashiers there. So sustainability needs to cover the impact on people, so human rights, without taking that into account. I don't see that you could even talk about sustainability. You need to cover the impact on planet. So, you know, environment, biodiversity, climate. Otherwise, it's also like a bit of weird to talk about sustainability. But also like the kind of the community side of the word, so that you actually try to offer these places of interaction and engagement and building these these kind of long-term projects where you don't just see the next 3 months of producing something or getting your thinking about the short term, but actually thinking about the long term. So I think this OMAMA tries to cover all these things. There's of course the economic sustainability, which is a challenge for OMAMA. There's the governance side of the OMAMA, but I think that's for me at least. I think that's functioning pretty well because it's cooperative, so there's a lot of participation. But if I would kind of think the big picture, I kind of hate the word holistic approach to sustainability because it's so vague. But OMAMA, in a way, has a very holistic approach to sustainability. And in any example, you can look a company or a community or not, any organization, you would always find some weaknesses in if you look at the kind of the big picture, you will always find some weaknesses in some of the kind of pillars. But I think these from the sustainability point of view, OMAMA is very, very solid in like environmental and human rights kind of ways.
Okay, how would you then convince people that are not supporting this change, like people who would rather go on with our current ways of doing agriculture? What would you tell them, kind of why this work is needed?
Yeah, I think if this person has been following at all like news, this shouldn't be too much of a challenge to kind of convince that we need a change because we have the kind of the, I think the latest alarm is the biodiversity loss, and that actually like our food production might be in danger because, you know, we don't have enough insects and bees and birds and, you know, flowers and everything. And I think this is a really worrying news, and the thing is that we would it is with these huge problems, it is kind of challenging to have one solution that would somehow fix everything, and making kind of making smaller questions, making this topic in these like smaller challenges, smaller problems, helps to start solving these issues. So if we try to fix agriculture in the world, then it's like, okay, so where to start? I couldn't do anything. But then it's like, okay, so where do you get your food, and could you change something in that the way you are doing it? And could you, do you know a farmer, or do you know a producer, and could you kind of visit the farm? Always, you know, getting to know the people who actually are struggling with these things helps. And it's not like, yeah, you know, the farmers are always just whining about the prices. And you see, you, if you look at the media, you get the idea that they are just always complaining, but there are actually a lot of things that they are already doing differently, but they can't do it by themselves. They need the support from governments. They need the support from consumers who can become more than consumers. So kind of, if somebody thinks that, no, we don't need to change anything, I don't even know if I would try to do that, because if we look at the kind of big picture, there's a big change happening with the EU Green Deal, with the corporate sustainability legislation. In Germany this year, they introduced this supply chain law, so everything is changing. And if somebody's like, I don't need to change anything, then I don't think that's a struggle worth fighting. They will have to accept the change anyway at some point.
Yeah. I mean, you've mentioned before already, and I think you've mentioned it now already, that like this is really a global scale problem that we are facing. Because, I mean, before you've mentioned the example of the United Kingdom and the problems with the agriculture. And given the fact that Omama has operated successfully here also in Finland, do you think like the concept of Omama could be applied on a global, not only a local scale, or maybe are you even aware of other cooperatives that are already applying this in different regions of the world, and that have maybe tried to emulate what Omama has been doing in Finland already?
The thing is that in Germany and France, for example, there are many community-supported agriculture initiatives, and in Finland there are a few. But somehow it seems that we are a supermarket nation. we don't have the kind of same culture in if you go a bit south from Finland, you will have these like boulangeries and, you know, these specified stores, and people are not that supermarket oriented. You would have like every week you would have these market events where you would go and buy fresh produce from a producer. So I think there are a lot of these alternative options. And when the pandemic hit everyone, we actually got more new members joining in, because people actually started having time, which is one of the challenges of modern people. We are extremely busy doing so many things, and I think, in my opinion, I think we should just, you know, do a bit less, and that would already solve some problems if we just, you know, didn't do so much. But yeah, so people joined the cooperative because they had more time and they started worrying about the future. But now I think we are back in the old, you know, happy oblivion where we don't need to really think about these structures. Maybe it's about the structures. We just lead our everyday life. And so I think every time there are these like bad news from around the world, people get this message that maybe something should change. And I think it partly strengthens all these alternative movements. And in Finland, it's not really like skyrocketing these cooperatives, but it's slowly strengthening the movement. And it's, you know, something that I can't see would disappear in the future, because these problems are not, you know, likely to go away. So I think people, you know, struggle in their everyday lives trying to have time, enough time for everything, and putting a bit of extra time on making this slow food and this food revolution it's not easy for everyone.
Okay, then we would also like to ask you a bit more about the regenerative agricultural practices that are used at Omama, if you know more about them. Like, it says on the website that the agricultural work is based on the concepts of permaculture and polyculture. Can you tell us a bit more how these concepts are implemented in the cooperative?
I can tell you some like examples that I've seen and I've been explained at the farm, but I'm not the expert here. I think the kind of the approach is it's so that you wouldn't have this like a piece of land and you would then, you know, farm the things the things that consumers are asking for, but actually you kind of try to understand the whole ecosystem, and you plant a different crops on different fields, and you have this like cycle of putting, like, for example, if you produce peas, they then intake typpi, what is it, nitrogen?
To the ground somehow, right?
It does different things to the ground than to the soil than other crops. So you have to have a cycle where you kind of take into consideration the effects of the crops on the soil. So you have that, and it's like we don't, because it's organic farming, so you are not putting, you are not importing chemicals and putting those in the land. Then there are these benches where you actually build this higher way of farming. Now I'm like totally I have like zero vocabulary for explaining this in English, but so you have these like penki, like this bench farming. I don't know, this probably if somebody who's listening knows about this, they're like, what, she doesn't know anything about this. But so they build these things that you don't need to, you can have the kind of benches for many years, and then you just build on top of those. And then there is this like this food garden, and the idea is to let the chicken wander in the orchard, so they will be fertilizing the land, and then the chicken can hide under the trees, and it's like this beautiful thoughts, a beautiful very big scheme of producing different things in like in harmony. And then there are so many plants. They've planted some, like, there's a little vineyard, and it will of course take a lot of time to actually have the first Omama wine. And then I don't know if the bees that are on the farm are actually ours, but there are some bees and a bit of honey production. So there's like so many things happening, and it's not like what we as members, for example, want. It's not like, yes, well, I would like to eat lettuce, but it's like, this, does it fit the system, and is it good for the soil, and all these things. So it's not, when we go to the supermarket, it's like what I feel like eating. This is based on the farm and the land, what it can give us and what is like possible and sustainable.
That sounds amazing and beautiful.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful. I don't know if my explanation sounded very, very expert explanation, but I'm not the expert on the farming side, so don't judge our cooperative like, oh, they are just bunch of idealistic hippies who know nothing about farming. Actually, Jukka Lassila is one of he knows so much about anything. I was wondering the other day, like at a farm dining evening. I was wondering, like, you know, these vegan alternatives for cheese are very heavily based on palm oil, and it's not very sustainable, you know, about the challenges in palm oil production, etc. And he was like, yes, I've been experimenting with fava bean milk or hemp oil or what was it. I was like, okay, all right, because I was like, could it be possible to produce these Finnish vegan cheeses? And so he had tried already that one too, so he knows everything about all the farming and how to produce things. But then it comes to the question of resources. If we had unlimited resources, we could be doing all these innovations, but it's actually because there's so much work, manual labor, we don't have the we need all the you know, hands on deck all the time.
Yeah, I think it's also like important to like point out, as we have here, that like in a cooperative like this, even though like the point is to produce food, that like all sorts of skills are needed. So like it's not like just the farm, but also that someone needs to do the social media and like the handouts and the logistics and everything.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that people often forget.
Yeah. And it's funny because then when you go to the supermarket and you want to buy something, you get like tomatoes from Spain for, I don't know what, €1.50. Or €3 per kilo, and then you're like, this is really cheap if you think how much like labor and resources went into these tomatoes. How is this possible? The workers definitely didn't get like living income from this. And what does the supermarket or the retailer get out of these tomatoes? And then there are all these expenses for the logistics and everything. And you're like, this is really not, this should not be so cheap. This should be more expensive. Like, yeah. And then when you actually do the work and then you're kind of happy to pay the price of the food, because you know that it's not free to do that.
Okay, then finally, we would like to hear, what are to you the most exciting things about Omama?
Well, the food is, I've learned to kind of to live with the different. I think the thing is that you have to think about the whole food thing in a bit different way. I have always food in my kitchen, because I have always like dried fava beans or, you know, some grains so I don't have this like I have nothing to eat feeling ever. I always have food, so this is something that is really nice. It's a bit like, you know, food sovereignty. I'm never worrying that something runs out of supermarkets. I don't have to worry about it because I have food. And then I just made the other day this really delicious lasagna, which had these, I think they were maybe spelt like lasagna sheets that we got from the Omama, and then it had fava beans. Okay, I also bought some stuff from the supermarket, like tomato, like this what is it, tomato puree and oat milk I had. Once I tried to make some oat milk myself from Omama oats, but then it was like, this is maybe a bit too much. This is maybe a bit too much even for me. So I get to eat really delicious food. I have this security, food security for myself and for my community, which is one of the biggest things for me to be part of this community of very many different interesting people. There are students, there are people who are, you know, leading this very alternative hippie lifestyle. There are artists, there are scientists, there are business people, all sorts of like fascinating people that share the same ideology or the same values. And so being part of this movement where we actually kind of not, we just don't talk about, you know, that we, these things need to change in world. And yeah, we need these structural changes, but we are actually doing it.
Yeah.
Is very, very inspirational for me. And I hope that it's for others as well.
I'm sure it is inspirational for them. And I think by now you've gotten a lot of our listeners interested in the work you are doing. So if they wanted to become involved in what Umama is doing, how could they start? How could they find more information on your cooperative?
The webpage would be omama.fi. And if you just, there's this, we have a Facebook group, we have Facebook page, we have Instagram. And if you just, you know, this is, I warn you, if you suggest that you might be interested in joining the work at the farm or, you know, participate on a farm dining event, you will definitely be invited to do so. And then you might get addicted. You might want to come to these events and these, join the farm. The farm, for example, it's a really beautiful place. And once you visit it, it's like you want to go back. So you might get addicted. But then there are many ways to participate. And I would really recommend to visit the webpage or contact me or, you know, get in touch and come to meet the people and eat the food.
Sounds like a great prospect. And I think that would bring us to the end of our interview. So thank you very much, Maya, for taking the time to tell us more about Umama, about your ecological farming cooperative and the important work you're doing. We and our listeners, we do appreciate it, and we wish you the best for the future and hope you can inspire other people to do their part in making our world a more sustainable and livable place.
Thank you so much.